Aswapati, the king of Madras, was very pious and religious. He always served the Brahmins, was highly spiritual, and was firm in fulfilling his pledges. He restrained his senses, performed sacrifices, and worked for the welfare of all beings. The best of donors, he was competent and adored by both the residents of the city and the country. However, this forgiving and truthful king, though married, had no child, and as he grew older, this distressed him. Therefore, in order to have children, the king decided to practice austerities and thereby atone for whatever sins he had committed in the past that resulted in his present misfortune. With a firm vow, he ate sparingly, observed celibacy, and curbed his senses. Moreover, he daily offered 10,000 oblations into the sacrificial fire, chanted mantras honoring the goddess Savitri, and ate moderately at the sixth hour. After the king observed this vow for 18 years, during one of the sacrifices, the goddess Savitri finally arose from the fire and said,
"O Aswapati, I have been pleased with your celibacy, your purity, and your self-control, your observance of vows, and all your efforts in reverence. Therefore, without violating the code of righteousness, how would you like me to bless you?"
"O goddess, please bless me with many sons who may be worthy of my family line. For the Brahmins have advised me that there is tremendous merit in having children."
"O king, since I had already known your desire, I spoke to Lord Brahma about it. So, by his favor, you will soon have a daughter of great power."
"A daughter?"
"Though I know you want a son, Lord Brahma asked me to tell you not to answer me now. You will understand later."
"All right, so be it."
Goddess Savitri then disappeared, and the king entered his city. Soon after, his eldest and virtuous queen, the princess of Malava, became pregnant and gave birth to a daughter. In honor of goddess Savitri, the baby was named after her. When the child grew up and reached puberty, she had a golden complexion, gorgeous face, slender waist, and ample hips. She looked like the goddess of fortune, and when people saw her, they thought, "Indeed, we have received a goddess." Her spiritual splendor, force, and beauty were so overwhelming that possible suitors, feeling unequal to and inadequate for her, refused to ask for her marriage. One day, when the moon changed its phase, Savitri observed the usual sacrifice. She ate no food, bathed her head, went before the family deity, and had Brahmins perform a ceremony and offer oblations into the fire. Taking the flowers that had been offered to the Lord, she proceeded to her father, who happened to be with his counselors. There she bowed to his feet, presented him with the flowers, and then, with joined palms, stood beside him. As the king looked at her, he saw she was of marriageable age. But since no man had sought her hand, this made him unhappy. So he said,
"My daughter, it is now time for you to get married. But no man as yet has asked to marry you. Therefore, it would be best for you yourself to look for a husband. His qualities, of course, should be equal to yours. Choose a man you feel strongly attracted toward. When you find him, let me know. If, after thorough consideration, I think he is suitable, I will surely give you to him. The Brahmins say that the father who does not get his daughter married will be disgraced. But remember, when you look for a husband, act in such a way that the gods will not disapprove."
After the king instructed his attendants to accompany Savitri, she offered him her respects and compliantly left the palace. Along with the king's elderly counselors, she mounted a vehicle and had the driver take her to a lovely sanctuary where royal sages lived. There she worshipped the elders' feet and wandered about the forest, distributing gifts to the Brahmins. Sometime later, Savitri returned to the palace. She went to her father's court and saw that he was conversing with the great sage Narad. When she approached them respectfully, Narad asked the king, "Where did your daughter go, and where is she coming from? She is now marriageable, so why don't you obtain a husband for her?"
"Oh, sage, that was the reason I sent her away, to find a spouse."
The king turned to Savitri.
"Now, my dear, tell me about the man you have chosen."
Savitri replied,
There was a righteous king among the Salwa people named Yumatsena. But after some time, he went blind. Then one of his former enemies, taking advantage of the king's weakness, took away his kingdom. Thereafter, the king, along with his wife and only child, left to live in the forest, take vows, and practice asceticism. His son is now a young man and worthy of becoming my husband. I have taken him into my heart as my lord.
Narad turned to the king. "That is too bad. Savitri has made a wrong choice."
"Wrong?"
"Yes. The youth she is referring to is called Satyavan, and he does have exceptional qualities. Both his father and mother are truthful. That is why the Brahmins named him Satyavan."
"And is he energetic, intelligent, forgiving, and courageous?"
"Oh, king, his energy is like the sun's, his wisdom like the guru of the gods, Brihaspati's, his courage like the king of the gods, and his forgiveness like the earth's."
"But is he generous in gift-giving and devoted to the Brahmins? And is he handsome, unselfish, and stunning to look at?"
"In gift-giving, he is like King Rantidev, who fed innumerable beggars. In truthfulness and devotion to the Brahmins, he resembles King Sivi, who offered his body as a sacrifice to protect a pigeon from a hawk. In unselfishness, he is like King Yayati. In handsomeness, like the moon. And in physique, like the stunning Aswan twins. Oh, he restrains his senses and he is humble. He's courageous and truthful. With controlled passion, he is dedicated to his friends, devoid of hatred, unassuming and forbearing. Indeed, great sages say that his behavior is always proper and his honor firmly established."
"Oh, sage, those are his good qualities. But what about his flaws, if any?"
"He has only one flaw, and it overpowers all his virtues." Aswapati wondered what it was.
"It is this. In 1 year from today, Satyavan will die."
The king turned to Savitri.
Well, my daughter, you heard what the sage said. So it will be best for you to choose a different man."
But Savitri replied,
"Death can come only once. A daughter can be given away only once. And a person can say only once, 'I give this away.' Only once can any of these events occur. Similarly, whether Satyavan's life is short or long, virtuous or evil, I will only choose my husband once, and I have done so."
Narad said, "O king, your daughter's mind is firm. It is not possible to dissuade her from this virtuous course. As no one else has Satyavan's virtues, I approve of this marriage."
"I shall do as you say, O sage, for you are my teacher."
"May Savitri's marriage be peaceful, and may you all be blessed. Farewell."
Narad then departed for the heavenly planets. The king proceeded to arrange for the wedding. He summoned all the aged Brahmins with their assistants. Then, on a favorable day, He, Savitri, and the priests started out for Dyumatsena's hermitage. When they arrived there, they approached the wise but blind royal sage who was sitting on a kusha grass mat under a sal tree. After properly offering his respects, Aswapati identified himself. Dyumatsena, in turn, presented the king with argya, consisting of water, milk, kusha grass, rice, durva grass, sandalwood, and flowers, as well as a seat and a cow.
What is the purpose of your visit?
Oh, royal ascetic, this is my lovely daughter, Savitri. I would like you to accept her for me as your daughter-in-law.
But we have been dispossessed of our kingdom. That is why we are living here. Our lives consist of practicing asceticism to acquire virtue. So how will your noble daughter bear the burden of doing the same?
My daughter and I know that happiness and distress come and go. Therefore, your words are inappropriate. I have come here with my mind made up, and out of friendship I have offered my obeisances to you. So I entreat you not to destroy my hope. We are equal in rank, we are kings, and are fit for an alliance. Therefore, please accept my daughter as your daughter-in-law and as the wife of your son.
In the past, I desired to have an alliance with you, but I hesitated. Then my kingdom was taken away from me. Thus, let my former desire be fulfilled now. Indeed, you are a welcome visitor.
The kings called all the Brahmins living in the surrounding retreats and, with proper rituals, had the marriage performed. Aswapati gave Savitri away with suitable robes and ornaments and then departed happily for his palace. Satyavan and Savitri were also very happy, for he had obtained a wife who possessed every attainment, and she had acquired a husband whom she truly loved. When Savitri's father had left, she discarded all her ornaments and dressed as a hermit, in tree bark and red-colored cloth. By her services and good qualities, her gentleness and austerity, and by her congenial attendance on all, Savitri satisfied everyone. She pleased her mother-in-law by waiting upon her person and by clothing her with robes and adornments. She pleased her father-in-law by honoring him as though he were a god and by restraining her speech. And she satisfied her husband by her sweet words, her skill in all kinds of chores, her balance of emotion, and her affectionate expressions in private. Nonetheless, day and night, as time elapsed, Narad's prophecy echoed through her mind, and she made her lament. When only 4 days remained before Satyavan was to die, Savitri began a 3-day fast. Her father-in-law, hearing about this, became sad and said,
"My daughter, you are observing a difficult vow. Perhaps you should not..."
"Do not be sad, father. I am determined to fulfill it, and I shall."
"All right, if you insist."
And he stopped trying to discourage her. Looking gaunt, Savitri spent the night preceding the day on which Satyavan was to die in dire agony. As the sun rose, she brooded,
"Today is the day."
Then she completed her morning rituals and made sacrificial offerings to the fire. Having bowed to the Brahmins, her father-in-law and mother-in-law, Savitri stood before them with joined palms and controlled senses. The Brahmins blessed her to never become a widow, and Savitri welcomed this with the thought,
"May it be so."
Nevertheless, she could not help expecting Saint Narad's prophecy to soon materialize. Since she had completed her fasting vow, her parents-in-law urged her to eat.
"I have resolved to eat when the sun sets today."
At that moment, Satyavan placed his axe on his shoulder and proceeded toward the woods. Noticing this, Savitri followed him and said,
"I would like to go with you today."
go with me? He was surprised.
Yes, because I cannot tolerate your absence.
But you never go to the woods with me. The paths are hard to cross, and you are very weak now.
But I don't feel weak, and I definitely would like to go. So please, please let me.
Well, all right, but first ask my parents' permission. I don't want to be responsible for any difficulties you may encounter.
Savitri went to them and said, I want to go with Satyavan to the woods today, for I can't stand to be away from him. Please let me go. It is almost a year since I last left the ashram, and I so much want to see the blossoming forests.
Her father-in-law replied,
I do not recall you ever saying anything with a hidden motive.
So, yes, you may go, but please do not divert Satyavan from his work there.
Savitri then left the hermitage with her husband. Outwardly, she was smiling, but inwardly she was agonizing. As they proceeded, they took in the beauty of the forest, its rivers, trees, flowers, and birds. Continually glancing at Satyavan, Savitri considered him as already dead. It was only a matter of moments now. Satyavan filled up his sack with fruits. Then he began to chop branches, and as he did, he started perspiring. Soon his head began to hurt. Feeling very weary, he said,
Oh, Savitri, due to this heavy work, my head, my limbs and heart, they're aching. I can hardly stand up, so I think I will go to sleep for a while.
He then sat down on the ground. Savitri sat beside him and placed his head on her lap. As she felt the moment of death coming, she saw a strange-looking being coming towards her. He was dressed in red and wearing a crown. His body was large and radiant, his complexion dark, his eyes red. Holding a noose in his hand and gazing at Satyavan, he looked dreadful.
Satyavan's wife placed his head on the ground gently. Then she stood up, her heart trembling, and said painfully,
You look superhuman, so I assume you are a god. Who are you? And why have you come here?
The visitor replied,
You are always devoted to your husband, and you have acquired the merit of performing austerity. That is why I am talking to you.
Savitri stared at him.
I am Yama, the Lord of Death. Your husband's days on earth are over. I have come to take his soul away.
But usually only your servants come. Why have you personally come?
Because this prince has excellent qualities, achievements, and bodily beauty. So he is above being carried away by my servants.
Lord Yama tied his noose around Satyavan's soul. Then he yanked the soul out of the body so that it was completely under his control. Satyavan's body, now lacking breath, luster, and motion, looked repulsive. As Yama dragged the soul southwards, Savitri followed him. Seeing this, he turned and said,
O Savitri, stop! Return and perform your husband's funeral ceremony. You have no more obligations to him, so do not follow me any farther.
I will follow my husband wherever you are carrying him, and wherever he freely goes. This is the eternal tradition. As a result of my austerities, my respect for my superiors, my love for my husband, my fulfilling of vows, and also your kindness, nothing is stopping me. The wise say that he who takes 7 steps with another person makes a friendship with him. Now that we are friends, please hear what I have to say. Even if a person passes through the 4 spiritual orders of life, celibate student, householder, retired and renounced, but has no control over his soul, he acquires no merit. What is known as spiritual merit is made up of true knowledge. The wise say that acquiring spiritual merit, rather than merely passing through these four orders, is the best of all things. If one practices the duties of even one of these orders according to the instructions of the wise, he achieves spiritual merit. Therefore, it is not necessary for one to desire to enter the first or the fourth order.
O Savitri, I am pleased by your knowledgeable and distinctive speech founded on reason. Therefore, ask me for any blessing except your husband's life.
All right. My father-in-law leads a life of seclusion in our ashram because he has lost his eyesight and kingdom. By your grace, may he regain his vision and become powerful.
Granted. You look tired from walking. Do not tire yourself any longer, and please stop following me and return home.
In my husband's company, how can I feel weary? My husband's fate is surely mine also. So wherever you carry him, I too shall go. Oh Lord Yama, please listen to me again. Even one conversation with saintly persons is very desirable. Friendship with them is even more so. And a relationship with them is always productive. Therefore, one should live with the saintly.
Your words are very valuable, Savitri. They satisfy the heart and increase the wisdom of even the wise. Therefore, ask me for another blessing, except your husband's life.
Some time ago, my father-in-law, who is very learned and brilliant, lost his kingdom. I would like him to recover it now and never relinquish his responsibilities.
Granted. Now please stop following me and return home.
You control all beings and bear them away, not by your fancy, but by justice. That is why you are called Yama, the Lord of Justice or Death. Oh, kindly listen to this. The constant responsibility of the virtuous is to never harm anyone in thought, word, or deed, but to love them and to give them what they deserve or deed. Everything in this world is like my husband now, dead. People are empty of both devotion and ability, but the virtuous are merciful even to enemies who ask for protection.
Savitri, as water is to a thirsty person, so your words are to me. Therefore, ask me for a third blessing, except Satyavan's life.
My father, Aswapati, has no sons, but to continue the family line, I would like him to father 100 sons.
Granted. Now that I have satisfied your wish, please stop following me. You have walked far enough.
Walking beside my husband, I have not noticed how far I have walked. In fact, I would like to walk farther. Please hear what I say now. You are the mighty son of the sun god, Vivaswat. Giving equal justice to all, you are called the Lord of Justice. One is not as confident even about oneself as he is with the virtuous. So everyone especially desires friendship with the virtuous. It is virtue alone that inspires confidence in all beings. That is why people depend especially on the virtuous.
O Savitri, I have not heard anyone but you speak such words. They greatly delight me. Therefore, ask for another blessing. Accept Satyavan's life. Then return to your hermitage.
All right. I would like to give birth to 100 sons. They should be powerful, skillful, and able to perpetuate our family line.
Granted. Now please stop following me. You already have come too far.
The virtuous always practice goodness, and when they associate with each other, this is always productive. Neither person jeopardizes the other. By the truth of the virtuous, the sun moves in the sky. By their austerities, the earth is maintained, and the past and future depend on them. Thus the virtuous are always cheerful in the company of the virtuous. Knowing this, the virtuous help others without expecting any reward. Serving the virtuous is never a waste. It never hurts one's interest and dignity. Because of such service, the virtuous often become the protectors of everyone.
The more you speak such significant words, full of sweet phrases, invested with virtue and pleasing to the mind, the more I feel respect for you. Therefore, ask me for a great blessing.
The last blessing you granted me cannot be fulfilled unless I unite with my husband sexually. Therefore, please restore Satyavan to life. Without a husband, I'm like a dead person. I do not want happiness, heaven, or prosperity, and I do not wish to live. You have blessed me to have 100 sons, yet you have taken away my husband. So please bring Satyavan back to life. Only then will your words prove true.
Yama realized he had no other choice, so he said, Well, so be it.
Then he untied the noose around Satyavan's soul. O Savitri, I have freed your husband, and he has no illness anymore. He will achieve prosperity and, along with you, will live for 400 years. When he performs sacrifices, he will attain great renown. Moreover, he will have 100 sons with you, and all their sons and grandsons will become celebrated monarchs. And your father will also have 100 sons with your mother Malabi. These sons will look like gods. They will be known as Malabas. Along with their sons and daughters, they will be very famous. Lord Yama then departed for his own planet.